Mind you, it's hardly worth it, as you'll see in a minute. And I still seem to have the background from last Rite meeting, which says birthday all over it, so never mind. Okay, we basically have just two open actions, which is quite amazing, and I suspect that the first one is going to be dealt with as part of the agenda. That's the clean-up of orphaned objects. Rife NCC, is that complete now, or is it still ongoing? Still ongoing. So we still have one open action. Okay. And then 58.1, Rife NCC, check that ASUs can support IPv6. Can anybody from the Rife NCC report on this? Anyone know? ASUs? Nope. Okay, so I think that one will have to be ongoing as well. And that's it. That's me. Done.
Okay, thank you, Nigel. And thanks to everyone involved to help us get this list down to just two entries, which is pretty nice. And I'd like next to ask Paul to give us the update on what's going on around the database from the point of view of the Rife NCC.
I'm Paul Paulse, the manager of the database group, and I'm giving you the update today. I will first start with introducing the database group to you, and then I'll go into what we've been doing since the last Rife meeting, and I'll give you some statistics on operational data. And I will also take back the points that we have taken back from the data protection task force meeting this last Monday, and then we have time for questions. So the database team, this is us. We have a new colleague who started last Monday, Benedetto. Our stakeholders, obviously you via the various working groups and via customer services and registration services, and internally we have the various departments within the Rife NCC. What have we been working on since Rife 58? Action point 54.3, which was making maintainers mandatory on person and role objects. We have completed all the coding for it, and the documentation is also ready. We still need to deploy a test environment. We first plan to deploy a test environment for it so that you could test any scripting that you may have built around the Rife database. We didn't finish that just yet, and we will deploy that as soon as possible after the Rife meeting. This is the page, the bootstrapping script that allows you to easily create a person maintainer pair. Action point 54.6, the cleanup of the unreferenced person objects. We suspended that right after the Rife 58 meeting. We presented that we started it and gave you some statistics on the increase of the daily batches that we would delete. Out of the previous meeting came the action point of making sure that NIC handles could not be reused, and we felt that it was wiser to stop cleaning up unreferenced person objects before we would actually implement this, and then restart it afterwards. One of the points of criticism that we could take home is that we may not have communicated everything well enough, so What we'll do right after the Rive 58.9 meeting is send around a little bit more information on why we stopped the cleanup procedure, and maybe a little bit more around the implications of it before we restart it again. Action point 54.7, deprecating ref server attributes. In the last meeting, we presented the fact that we had changed the business logic no longer to allow you to enter a ref server attribute in AS numbers, so that you could turn them into remark fields manually. We now have made a batch update of the remaining objects that had a ref server attribute in there and turned them into remark lines. And we found that approximately 105 objects were affected, were changed. So then there's some various updates. Also in previous RIPE meetings, we presented a new hardware platform. Last meeting, we showed you that we were ready to deploy it. We've deployed almost everything. There are some minor or smaller services that we still need to migrate, but that will happen without any operational interruption. Removing personal data from split files in the NRTM stream, NIC handles are considered to be personal data, so we have had to remove those also from these externally facing services. The software for this is also ready again. Documentation is ready, and also for this particular change, we would first like to give you access to a test environment. So again, you could test your scripts against it, and we will deploy the test environment also as soon as possible after this meeting. And then we come back to not reusing NIC handles. This came out of the Data Protection Task Force meeting of the RIPE 58 meeting, and then we discussed it during the database working group session. We had the idea to allow you to choose the prefix, and we would auto-generate a number and attach that to it. However, we found a more elegant solution that would not change anything. You can still choose your own NIC handle. However, if the NIC handle has existed before or exists, we will just return a message asking you to resubmit a new creation with a new unique NIC handle. This code for this change has been deployed on the 10th of September. Mirrors. In the last RIPE 58 meeting, again, we acknowledged the fact that mirroring is important to you, and we took home the task of improving the service. We have made a list of how much out of sync we were, and found that APNIC was the most problematic one. Addressed that, we got access to their split files again, we reloaded the mirror, and we will do that for every other mirror that we hold, and after that make sure that we improve the service and keep the service appropriate. Currently the APNIC mirror is still out of sync. We still need to deploy the database, so that's also something that's on the list to do for us. So the operational updates, some statistics. This is the customer service people that answer your queries. They are our first line of support, and they escalate any questions to us. These are the average amount of tickets per month between the various RIPE meetings. So between RIPE 57, 58 is the blue lines, and orange lines is between the last meeting and this meeting, and rather stable with some decreases. Statistics on the RIPE database. RIPE queries per minute, going strong at 6,500 a minute. We also like to show you the IPv6 service, or the service over IPv6. In the last meeting, it was less than 1% of the queries. And actually, this meeting, it's over 6% of the queries we receive over IPv6. Then how do we use our query method? How do you access the queries? Primarily over port 43 or who is a client. There's a decrease in the proxy access and nothing spectacular there. Then we did some mapping using GeoIP, so where do people query from which country, and yeah, there's various changes in order. How frequent do individuals query our database? Well, it's still primarily ad hoc queries, and there's only a handful of IP addresses that query our database more regular than 1,000 or 10,000 queries a month. Successful Whois updates. Let me say something about that gap. We deployed our new platform, and we only reloaded the graphs for from the beginning of the year onwards. And obviously, when time goes by, this gap will close. We have an average of update messages of 8 per minute. We can easily handle that. And most of the updates are still received via email. And sync is actually all the other methods of updating the database, web, and we ourselves also use sync. And then most of the messages are successful. 30% of the update messages fail. Maybe we could probably, it is a considerable amount, so, but we could probably also attribute it to the fact that we deprecated the ref server and made some schema changes, so some people may have found that they didn't know about it, and some messages, a little bit higher amount of messages filled. And then, obviously, we're also an operational department, so we like these figures. Last meeting, there was a drop in the mail update service, but that was due to the fact that our monitoring service reported some false negatives. But this time, we had the glorious numbers of 100%, and not too bad for mail either. So, from the Data Protection Task Force highlights, there's two outstanding items we still need to review, the acceptable use policy and the proxy access service agreement. And we also actually found that our mission is completed, so the task force will be closed down. There's two more items, things to clean up. We still have the tasks of addressing the forward domain objects. We have to work with the TLDs that still use our database for provisioning, and that's something that we will be doing. We need to work with them and see how we can help them to store it elsewhere and then clean up those objects. And maybe Wilfried wants to say a little bit about improving the first database.
Yeah. Yes, the background is that there is a small loophole in the structure, which probably just very few of us will ever notice, but still it's something which should be attacked. For those of you who do understand the delegation tree in the reverse DNS structure, there is delegation points at the /8 level, at the /16 level, and then at the /24 level. And if you happen, and that's particularly true for legacy address space, if you happen to have a delegation point at the /16 level, then in some situations you can actually manage to register an additional reverse domain object in the database, which is on the delegation level of /24. So that's syntactically correct, and it's probably semantically correct what you put into the database, but it will never have any effect. Because actually, if you do the tree walk from the root, you hit the delegation point at the /16 first, and then you sort of move over to a different server. So the things that are below that level will never be queried, will never become effective. And if you have to do a little bit of debugging, if something goes slightly wrong, then you get completely derailed by seeing different things, different answers, depending on where you throw your query or your analysis at. And this is actually something which we think that the database should actually prevent registering information which is ineffective, which is never looked at, and which can actually sort of distract you from the right path. That's the background. I don't know, Peter, if you want to add anything to that. Okay.
So, George Michelson from APNIC. Obviously, because we have a large dependency on the ripe Whois code for doing our reverse address delegation management, we have also discovered this. Our zone creation processes are radically different to yours, and because of that, we had introduced pre- and post-processing phases that simply removed these. But we had been exposed to this issue, and I heartily thank you for any structural improvements you can make which will make it impossible to pre-create these objects. I think this is a very, very good initiative to take. Thank you. Yes, thank you.
Peter Koch, co-chair of the DNS working group, and this was brought up by actually Anand in the DNS working group last time. So it caused operational problems at the NCC or at other parties to start with, and then resulted in tickets with the NCC, and we had a look at that. And the point is that the sole purpose of these domain objects' presence in the database is not documentation. The only purpose for them is to feed that zone provisioning process. So there's just no justification to keep this stuff. And I just had a look, and if I'm not mistaken, this is not only true for the V4 reverse space, but there seem to be rare cases. Well, there are only rare reverse delegations for V6 anyway, but let's not go there. But both should be dealt with at the same time, probably. And yeah, thank you for taking this up and making this a bit less of a surprise to the operators. Thanks.
So maybe we can move into question time.
So just as a formality to follow up, I think we should actually log a formal action item on our IPNCC to have a look at that, and either to clean it up or to report back what the situation is or what we could do. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, that's perfect. Okay, let's...
Hello.
Sorry, it's because you're... George Michelson again. I apologize if any aspect of our service delivery of Whois is impeding the mirroring. Please talk to us offline if there is anything we can do to help resolve the imbalance between our respective database states. As a point of information, we are in very close to the end of a fairly major internal software exercise to make our modifications to your code base operate against the current head state as we last saw it, which will bring us much more tightly into line with your code base. In particular, we will gain the benefit of all your investment in developing native V6 query support. I was extremely excited to see as much as 6% load in V6. Based on all the discussions we have about usage of V6 at application level, that's possibly the highest single measure of active V6 service delivery I've ever seen. I think that's an amazing number. But hopefully, when we come closer to your current code state, we will be in a much better state to maintain some consistency of outcome.
Sure.
And we thank you for your continued support and development of this product. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions to Paul regarding the presentation? If not, then I'd like to come back briefly to these two bullet points, like the Data Protection Task Force. The thing is winding down. We still have to review, I think, two documents, and just to get back to the ripe NCC with feedback. Well, that's actually what we wanted it to look like. And then we will formally announce, probably by way of Rob, that this task force is actually closing down.
Yep.
Anyone who has been in this task force wants to add anything to that? No? Okay. The other thing I'd like to come back briefly is the management of removal of unreferenced objects. The reasons why we brought it up again here is something to look at and formally put it into this presentation, is that we want to make you aware, everyone, you, me, us, that this removal of unreferenced objects is not limited to personal role objects in itself. But there is also the mechanism, it's an inherent mechanism, that also clusters of unreferenced objects will be removed. And those clusters will include maintainer objects. And in the past, we had sort of this vision that the maintainer is something which is stable. So this is probably something which we will try to make very, very obvious in whatever explanation and description of the process you are going to put forward.
That's the idea, yes.
So if any one of you has any strong feelings or any input to that one, now is the time to speak up, because the way to go forward is actually to do another round of information campaign and then to start this operation rolling. And while some of us have asked and have suggested to the RIPE-NCC to suspend it again for a short while, this is definitely going to go forward.
Absolutely.
So please be aware that things are going away unless you do the right thing. And the right thing is either to reconnect your maintainer or role or person objects to real resource registration pieces, or to use the White Pages service for individual persons. It is there, and it was actually implemented to sort of to provide you an alternative method to remain in the database. That was the task force thing, that was the unreferenced object thing, and I think that was everything I had on my list to fill in and to add.
Okay.
So unless there are any other comments, thanks to Paul.
Thank you.
For the update, and we have... And we are going to continue with a maybe short discussion regarding Shane Kerr's proposal or request or suggestion to think about restructuring the online documentation, which is related to the database operations. I don't know if anyone has followed this discussion. Shane is here, so I'd ask him to actually give his point of view.
Hi. So I don't actually have a presentation about formats, but if I can pull up a browser. The thing is, when I look at documentation online, when I use a web browser, I can do things like resize it, and I can read it in a continual text, let's just find some, find some documentation. Looks like someone's been reading the Postgres manual, very nice. So yeah, you see, you can just kind of scroll down and you can see the entire table of contents here. And you can quite happily just kind of go to a section and you can read the whole thing. It's very straightforward. Now, when you go to some, it's very natural when you're working actually with a reference to have it in a format like HTML. So you can, this is how we use the web, right? This is where we spend most of our time. Now, if it's a Mac. If it's a PDF document, sorry, I hope I'm not taking too much time with this. If it's a PDF document, then it's actually a bit more cumbersome. It's really nice if you want to print it out and read it on the train or something like that. We have one database document now, and it actually has no content. It just tells you to go and look in the database document library, which is all PDF. So now I have this nice paginated version, and I have to kind of click over here on the right, and now my table of contents is broken up, and it's not a major problem, but it's just a lot less handy, and I can't really resize it very nicely. I can maximize it, but I can't make it small so I can actually work on the database, which is what I want to do. Anyway, this is a long way of saying, please put it in HTML. I think PDF is great, and I think it does exactly what it's meant to do. I just think if we could go to Microsoft Word and click Save as HTML, that would make me happy. So.
Okay, so probably a question to Ruben to see people. Do you think that this is a major effort to try to do the thing, or?
Well, I have that question. Sorry, I'm interrupting. I don't remember, maybe I wasn't paying attention. I don't remember when it changed. I don't use the database documentation very often. So the last time I used it, it was available in text format, and now it's available in PDF, so.
Dennis Walker, Ripon CC. I think the reason it changed wasn't by design, perhaps more by accident. We at some point agreed to drop the Ripe document status on the manuals. The idea was that every time we do a software change,
right,
we can very quickly roll out a new version of the document.
This sounds familiar, yeah.
And I think more by accident, it just happened that we only produced the PDF and we somehow dropped the conversion of the PDF to HTML. I had a brief chat with our comms guys before the meeting, and we don't see any major problems with producing it in both PDF and HTML. So, yes, we will take this on board and go back and look at it again.
Cool. Thank you very much.
Okay, then the next thing on the agenda is to formally come back to a message on the mailing list regarding the sort of public disclosure of a password for the routing registry maintainer thing. Personally, I don't have any strong feelings about this one because the purpose of this mechanism is well documented. It has been there since the introduction of the RPSL stuff and RPSS. But as this was a request on the mailing list, I felt it is appropriate to bring it up for this meeting. So if anyone has strong feelings, please speak up. If this is not the case, I think we acknowledge the message on the mailing list, but we don't see any need to follow up on that one or to expend any effort in changing stuff. Anyone having input? No? Okay, thanks. Which takes us to the proposal or suggestion by Piotr, coming up with a few slides regarding ideas and proposals to make some mechanisms in the database more useful and more straightforward. And I think you have prepared a couple of slides, so the floor is yours.
Hello, everybody. Together with my colleague Adam Osuchowski, we would like to introduce a proposal for searching the key charts objects with the owner attribute. There's right now no possibility to search such objects with the owner attribute, and the owner attribute is quite important and human readable, although it's generated. Because it's generated directly from the certificate, we cannot search it. We cannot use it to search the objects, as we can see. That's the extract from the query. So the proposal is to modify DB software to enable such lookup. And in our opinion, there should be possible some kind of searches. we should be able to search using the email address for both X509 and PGP key certs, because there are two types of key certs right now, with full name for PGP, with common name value for X509, and we are thinking that there should be both full and partial search. I will explain that later on the example. And as an option, because we are not dedicated to that piece of proposal, the full value of owner field should be also possible to use for the search. So example, I took up two extracts from the database dump. Sorry, folks, they were probably the first two in each category. And as you can see, the owner field is quite different in PGP and X509. In PGP, it's quite simple. It's the owner and email address. As far as I remember, there could be comment, but I'm not sure right now. In the owner, we have the a lot of attributes: country, organization, organization unit, common name, and email address. And for me personally, the common name and email address is the most interesting part of this field. So the proposed search methods should be who is, and as you can see, the email address. Basically speaking, the email address for both cases are exactly the same kind of query. The third thing is the full name. It was for the PGP. The next two queries are the queries for the X509, for the common name part, and the first is the full common name, and the second one is the part of the common name, and I think it's a nice way to search for the certificates issued for all members of the LIR, because the structure here is the LIR.theusername, and that's basically the idea behind this partial search. And as an option, as I said before, the full value of the owner field could be used to search the key cert object. Pros and cons. For me, the pros is it will be easier to find certs. I was looking some weeks ago for my own cert, and because I forgot to tell you, forgot about it, and I was surprised that I am unable to do it in a very simple way, and the solution was to download the database dump and just grab it, and so that takes some time. There is a remark here. As far as I remember, even with the Glimpse search on the website, there is an impossible to search key certs. So that, in my opinion, that should be also somehow improved. And there is, of course, some kind of con. Current search is full value. If I want to search for typical John Doe and put a who is minus T person John D-O, not Doe, I will not find him. So it's full value, and my proposal is somehow partial. So it is either need to be changed to the software that allow the partial searches, but this could influence other searches, like partial searches of persons or so on and so on, or the new flag is necessary to support this proposal. I am not sure which of them will be better for me. Any questions for that?
Peter?
Peter Koch, DINIC. Speaking in personal capacity, of course. Could you go back to the slide with the heading examples too? Yes, thank you. I probably missed that. For the first big bullet item, proposed search methods, the difference between the last two examples, what is the intention there? So isnic.thor.hs, that's the common name, right?
Yes, that's the common name.
So you want to be able to search by common name?
Yes.
And the next one, what would that be?
The next one, I want to have a possibility to search for the beginning of common name, because the structure is lir dot username. It's my own is pl.ckpolsl dot username, and here is IS probably from Iceland, yes?
Yeah.
Iceland nick and something like that.
Okay, so that.
I would like to search all the key search used by users from this particular.
Understood. I think generally that might be a good idea. I mean, having these certs being searchable, I haven't thought about the downsides there. I'm a bit concerned of any method in the database that could reveal personal data based on this wildcard kind of queries, be that hierarchical or otherwise. I might be completely mistaken here, but I think we should be very careful going down that road.
Yeah, but because you are commenting the last example, yes?
Yeah.
And I think that all of them are partial somehow, because as you can see, those are parts of the owner field, no matter of what. It's not full value of the owner field, and that will be the partial search. I'm not searching for the full value. So making it more partial probably doesn't make any difference. Of course.
Yeah. Then we should stop there to start with. Sorry for the pun, but.
No, Peter, just to make me understand your concerns, it's your line of thinking that the email identity or the name in a public key is private information or personal information that should be protected?
That can start a long religious debate, I guess, and I'm not going there. My concern is having... It's not the email address per se, but the certificate is obviously bound to some person, the whole certificate. And even though I understand these are in the split copies of the database, so you can download them and, massage them at your will, this may or may not be a good idea. And I'm concerned about having this wildcard type of queries. And then, of course, there's the question whether the common name, whether that's a real... we have the same in the DNS world, where people believe that hierarchy in the domain name space has anything to do with hierarchy in the real world, which just is not the case, period. And from a technology point of view, I'm not sure that this is a good idea here either.
Okay. No, because I have to admit that I'm illiterate when it comes to X509, because I'm old style PGP guy. And first of all, let me state that I also had this problem of not finding a key. So we solved the problem, or I solved the problem for myself by adding commands and attaching the key IDs to sort of other information to provide that linkage. So I really can see the need for such a thing. What I'm sort of whether we want to go into that religious or very fundamental discussion about sort of personal identity things. I think that's one of the inherent problems in X509, and that's also one of the inherent reasons why I don't use that. That you just cannot create, or you're not supposed to create, role-based certificates, and that's the reason why I use PGP myself, and I don't use my personal key for authenticating transactions in the database. But that does not take away the problem of how do I find the key which is relevant in the database. So, yeah, Peter, I do see the point, but on the other hand, this information is already publicly available in the database. So just providing another way of finding it is maybe not that bad. There are other comments. Go ahead, please.
Excuse me. Can I respond to that?
Well, I was going to respond to it as well.
Okay, so we were first.
Okay. Your characterization of X509 is wrong, to use a technical term. Roles-based certificates are perfectly fine. Yeah. Organization is a well-defined...
You basically follow my response.
Yeah. Organization is a well-defined attribute, so it's anticipated. I think the fundamental issue here is that whether you're talking about a PGP environment where you can make up any name you want, or the X509 environment, you can also make up any name you want. There is not one global directory information tree as X500 had envisioned there would be. So common names, even qualified by other attributes, are not guaranteed to be globally unique. There are lots of CAs out there. So the problems are really fundamentally the same in both of them. There's no fundamental difference in the level of personal information that you're disclosing in one versus the other.
Yeah. That was basically the same thing what I was going to say. I have a few certificates for wireless, for grid environments, for certifying my students, and so on and so on. That a lot of them, and okay. We have role-based certificates,
okay.
Basically given by different organization units.
Yeah. Well, as I said, X509 illiterate.
So. Not a problem.
Okay. Any other comments? Because we should sort of go ahead and agree on what to do with that. My feeling is that we do see the merits of the proposal, and we also do see the concerns. So my suggestion would be to start the real discussion on the mailing list with regard to those aspects, like privacy and data protection and that sort of things, and at the same time ask the RIBNCC to just investigate what the amount of effort would be to implement parts of that or some aspects of that. And then we continue that on the mailing list and we agree on how to proceed. Mm-hmm. And we might even want to have sort of that sort of technical discussion with Commence in trying out the RIPE Labs environment. That would actually be a very nice exercise to find out whether this is useful. Mm-hmm. Okay, but you've got a second proposal to make?
Yes. That's another one. Introduction of optional MNT-REF and REF-Notify attributes for person and role objects. That was on the list, so basically speaking, most of you probably know that. Right now, there's a lack of authorization during the person role reference process, and that could lead to abuse of the objects, and there could be a number of reasons for such behavior. For example, lazy customer reference upstream contact just to avoid taking care about the abuse, or nasty person reference some objects to mislead users who are looking for abuse contacts. We can do this very easily and have a nasty PA block which change every single day the contact details. That's possible. So the proposal is to add two optional attributes, MNT-REF, which could be added to personal role objects to prevent authorization problems, just like in the organization, and REF-Notify optional attribute, which could be added to enable notification mechanism the same way. And pros and cons, reusing the existing mechanism, increased security, and of course, some work seems to be done. And I would like to thank Shane, which is somewhere here. Oh, yeah, thank you. Because Shane pointed me out to MNT-REF on the list. My original proposal was somehow different. So, questions?
Dennis Walker, RIBNCC. We are aware of this issue, and we have seen examples of both accidental and malicious intent to reference the wrong person objects. This has been considered by the Data Protection Task Force as well. There are a number of issues here. First of all, by implementing this type of arrangement, we are going to considerably change the operational work with the database. because anybody who then wants to reference a person object needs authorization. If they don't have that authorization, but they really need to make this change to their INITNOM object or OpenNOM object or whatever, there's a high likelihood they will just simply copy it and create a second person object with the same data, which they now maintain and they can now reference. So it could lead to quite a lot of duplication of personal data. As for the security aspect, yes, it would prevent the accidental reference to the wrong persons, because you'd suddenly realize, oh, that's not my person because I don't have the authorization for that one. For the deliberate malicious intent to reference a person object, they can simply copy all the personal data in the person object that they want to make a reference to and reference the copy of it. Now, although we can follow the audit trail and we can see who did that, we can equally well see who made the reference to a real existing person object now. As for perhaps local the law enforcement agencies looking into the database, they won't recognize or realize the difference between a reference to a real person object or a reference to a copy of somebody's person object. So the usage of this isn't really going to help a lot in terms of security. So yes, we could do it, but there's a lot of implications there to consider.
Okay, thank you. I have to comment on that. I'm pretty much sure that from the legal point of view, the abuser can very easily excuse himself by saying, oh, sorry, that was a mistake, if he points to the to existing object. But if he copy in all the data from John Doe object and make another one and then link it to his independent resource, that will not be for judge a kind of, you know, mistake. I think from the legal point of view there is a difference. That's the clearly intentional behavior and something which could be excused as mistake. So from my point of view, there is a difference.
Hi, this is Shane Kerr from ISC. Regarding the first point that Dennis brought up of people not being able to get a reference so they create a duplicate object with no malicious intent, I mean, that's kind of the design of adding this mechanism, is to make sure that people get permission before they reference your object. There is a benefit to having such a protection, even if people copy the information, which is that I can delete my object, right? Or I can, basically that's it. Right now you're in a situation where I've got to ask the right DBM to please help me, and Ripe's like, well, we don't know. So this is an attempt to at least let me maintain my own data, which right now I have no way to protect the objects that I'm responsible for. So that's.
Yeah, and moreover, there was a few minutes ago a statement about the mandatory MNT buy. So there will be probably somehow of protection also to create personal enroll objects. So there will be somewhere the necessity to use maintainers. And I think that's not the case. I agree with Shane that the design is to, if someone see that there was an error because of lack of authorization, and he's the person who is authorized to do such reference, he probably add the password or sign a message with the certificate or whatever, to do this again. And if that's a malicious person, yeah, there are other ways to shoot him.
Peter?
Peter Koch, DINIC. I think I understand your proposed solution. I'm not so sure I understand the problem space that you're trying to address here. So I am partly with Dennis, but also partly with Shane. And I'd suggest that before going further on discussing details of the implementation, can we please explore the problem a bit more. So how much of this accidental slash malicious stuff do we really see? What is really achieved by introducing this additional barrier? And well, as much as I hate to say it, but a judge possibly would is usually not a good phrase to get there, because good practice has been that in such cases, excuse me, in such cases, if need be, RIPE-NCC gets legal advice on these issues, especially data protection stuff and so on and so forth. And even that legal advice won't guarantee what the judge would do. But that is much more helpful than second guessing there, and not picking on you personal, but just that's from experience. So let's please explore the problem space a bit more and get numbers if that's in any way possible. Yeah. And work ahead from there.
Yeah, okay. I have to admit that on the very first example, lazy customer, we probably do not get the correct numbers, because I think that a lot of medium-sized ISPs doesn't care about that and take care about the lazy customers' abuse and try to pass the emails and so on and so on, just not to lose the these customers. So I'm not sure if we get the correct numbers.
Yeah, okay. So the numbers, sorry, George. But
No, okay. It's fine.
The correct numbers, I'm not after the fourth digit after the comma. It's just getting a sense of the volume. Okay. And I know it's early morning, but to be blunt, I mean, if nobody cares, mm-hmm. then how to prove that there's really a problem? So no. I guess at least you seem to care, and I suppose that you have example / evidence of this stuff, and that is contributing to the problem description and to the numbers, so to speak.
Yeah, Peter, to come back to the numbers, I personally have experience with that case happening, not in the RIPE database, but in a domain name registry database. And sort of the problem in principle is there. How prominent it is in the RIPE database is a different thing. But okay, you want to react to that directly? Yeah. Okay.
It doesn't matter. It's fine.
The problem with numbers, there could, at this very moment, be a few examples, or possibly thousands or tens of thousands of examples in the RIPE database as we speak, but unless somebody tells us, there's no way of us knowing that. We don't know if a reference to a person object was correct, was accidentally wrong, or maliciously wrong. We only know when somebody actually mentions it to us and complains perhaps to RIPE DBM because there's a reference in a maintained object which they can't remove, and they realize that there shouldn't be a reference in there. We do get occasional complaints, but that in no way reflects the possibility of how many could be wrong in the database today.
I think we should go on. Yeah, sure.
So, George Michelson, APNIC. Please do not interpret anything that I say as an implied criticism of your approach to the database design or its referential integrity, because I have spoken at your meetings many times over the years, and I always worry that it feels like I am critiquing or criticizing, and I don't mean that. But I do observe that we take a very different view, I think, in APNIC to the nature of data management in our WHOIS on your code base. And we take a view that the primary interface for changes in our system is a portal. And when you make that decision, you have available to you a tool suite which has nothing to do with the database, about gaining active consent to have things done as a gating mechanism before it goes into your WHOIS. So if you're saying that you think it would be important for people to give active consent, that they be referenced as a admin C zone, C tech, C notify, constructing an entirely referentially complete model inside WHOIS, I think from the history of speaking with you, Wilfred, I've gained a sense it's very hard. And it has implications for the consequences in code of checking when references go away. You have to have backward links and forward links, and it complicates your schema. If you take a view that you gate processes into this system, implementing this in the gating system, the portal, is a different scoped problem. So I would say that there are aspects of this which I think in the policy sense, in the design logic, this is really good. Saying, no, you should have consent to reference other people's information structures in Whois, good. Should it be first class in the Whois system? I feel less sure. I feel that it's a goal that should be established and you should pursue questions like how many are there, but not necessarily seek to only solve this in Whois. I think other mechanisms help to confront this problem. That was the sense of my comment.
Yes, I totally agree. And one of the points we do actually want to make more is that we've reached a point where we do want to take a step back and look at the bigger picture in terms of the RAP database and things like portals and access and updating methods. And we feel that now is the point when we should take this step back and have the bigger view. And maybe through RAP Labs come up with some ideas and proposals on possible ways forward.
If we have another minute, otherwise I'll take this offline. Peter Koch-Dienig, I think I owe you an explanation of or a correction of what I asked for in terms of numbers, otherwise it might look like a killer argument here. So of course you can't see from the database by looking at the database which is right and which is wrong, because then consistency and cleanup would be easy. But I guess in a first attempt, the cross-maintainer references from objects to persons might frame the size of the problem to start with. Intra-maintainer references, you're helpless anyway. And then the number of complaints / inquiries around this could give some indication. So just to give a sense of what's happening out there. And otherwise, yes, what Wilfried said, there are other parts of the industry which have interesting experiences with this.
Okay, let me add, George. First of all, thank you very much for this input. It's definitely not going to be seen as criticism, but as a very, very helpful and very useful contribution. What we also should, in that sort of framework of thinking, what we also should keep in mind is the statistics page that Paul showed us about the updates, and I think it was about 3/4 of the transactions are coming in our region, still through the regular email thing. So this also should be part of the bigger picture and the planning that we have to actually get the user base to use different tools. And again, out of curiosity, because I don't know what the innards are and what the interfaces are, email can easily be scripted. Yes. A portal is sort of a web interface is more difficult to script.
Yes.
Unless you provide the hooks.
I think the discussions in the Aaron San Antonio meeting went directly to this consideration, and I think the energy that they've invested has been the consideration of a portal interface that is functionally what I think IBM Tivoli would call middleware. If you implement a web view, the mechanism should be inherently scriptable behind the gloss of the web clicks. And in a sense, sync updates were taking you there. But I would also like to say, I respect entirely the fact that your members overwhelmingly wish to use mail, and we must not go in advance of their behaviours. We cannot deprecate this in significant ways without consent. So this is a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is, it bears thinking about. But anyway, thank you for an opportunity to talk to you.
Yeah, thank you. So I think that's about time to...
Just one more comment.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry, two comments. First of all, the XML, SOAP, and so on, there are mechanisms to have a scripted web interface, and that's the solution. But probably all of us know about that. And the other comment is to Peter and Shane, because both of them raised the legal argument. I think that I agree with Shane. If it could be possible, if it could be needed from the legal point of view that the person whose data are in the database should be able to protect them, and that will be probably the key argument to implement that. I don't know if from the Dutch law point of view I am supposed to have the mechanism to protect my own data.
If yes, yeah. that would be the argument to implement such thing.
Okay, so I think to wrap it up, first of all, thank you very much for these proposals and for bringing this up. As we've seen, this has already sparked quite a bit of interesting discussion. So thanks for that one. Secondly, I guess the issue of protecting things and in particular following up on Dennis, that any change into that direction would have quite a bit of impact on business processes and other things. My feeling is that this should actually be discussed in the framework of the services working group, because we are supposed to provide the tool set, but sort of the framework and the business processes and the application and policy things should be discussed in the services working group. And thirdly, I really think these pretty fundamental discussions would be a very good idea to try to have these discussions and to collect these ideas within a reasonable framework and to try to do that on the labs environment. We had a couple of private talks in the hallways over the last 2 days, and the idea was developing to have some special corner devoted to database, and this might actually be one of the reasons to start that corner to become populated. So thanks, Piotr, for bringing it up.
Thank you very much.
And the last item on our agenda is input from other working groups. Unfortunately, or fortunately for us, because we don't meet on Friday morning, we are meeting one day before, but unfortunately the anti-abuse working group is meeting after the database working group, so what I had expected to be able to touch upon was the discussion sparked by AbuseX. As this is going to happen after the end of this meeting, we have to deal with it on the mailing list or bring it up during the next meeting. And the other short item here was just to mention the proposal from that was given by Piotr during. Of course.
Brian Nisbet speaking in my capacity as chair of the anti-abuse working group. I'm not sure how much discussion we're going to have this afternoon. There is no one from AbuseX at the meeting. While some points have been made, I feel very dubious about being any sort of proxy for a proposal which is very unclear, and I also may or may not agree with at any given point in time. So while it's going to be raised, I don't know if there's actually going to be anything in any way concrete to come out of that. So I'm kind of hoping that if there is a proposal, then somebody will actually raise it themselves on a mailing list, and we can look at it from that point of view.
Okay, thank you for that input. I just didn't want to sort of put it under the carpet and...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So it was put there more or less for formal reasons to have a very clear understanding after the end of this meeting week where we are standing with that, whether there is anything to follow up on or not. Okay, and the last thing to point at is that Piotr has proposed yesterday during the services working group to implement some mechanism to link independent resources to the sponsoring LIR. That has sparked quite an interesting discussion as well. And this is going to be followed up on in the services working group environment. It was just sort of that this might have an impact on the database machinery, so I put it onto today's agenda as input from other working groups, just to make you aware this is being discussed. That gets us to the end of the agenda. To any other business, is there anything you want to bring up, to start discussion on, to comment on? No? Everyone's silently reading email or listening to my broken English. So thanks for being here. I think we are going to close this meeting a little bit early this time, but it's also, I think, a good sign that there is not too much contentious things, that there is not too much things left on the plate to do. So thanks for being here, and see you next meeting, and see you on the mailing list, and maybe we will meet again on the RIPE Labs environment to try that out and to find out whether it's useful to integrate that into the discussion environment. Thank you for being there. See you.
Sorry, I forgot to bring this up earlier. There was a presentation at the beginning of the routing working group. I don't know if it was discussed. Nick Hillard talked about the changes he's made to the IRR tool set, which is unfortunate that it was across from this meeting, but I guess it was recorded and the slides are available and you can talk to him. The short summary is that he made a release yesterday. So there's a new version. It's about 40% the size of the last version in lines of code. I have lots of bugs fixes and things like that, so check it out. Thank you.